This is Issues and Ideas here on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Randall White. And for this segment, we're talking transportation, specifically flying. The Central Coast is home, as you likely know, to four local airports, Monterey, San Luis Obispo, Santa Maria, and Santa Barbara. Each one offers a slightly different selection on nonstop flights. For instance, if you need a direct shot to Las Vegas, Santa Maria or Monterey can help you out. Those of you needing to go to or connect through Denver or Seattle, Santa Barbara has your flights. San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Monterey all offer nonstops to LA, San Francisco, and Phoenix. Santa Maria, however, now only goes to San Francisco. In addition to its Las Vegas service, it cut out LA this past summer. One of those four airports is working toward a relatively large terminal expansion and is rallying for additional nonstop destinations as well. Kevin Buman is the general manager at the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport, or SBP, for those of us who fly a lot. And he joins us in studio to get us up to speed on recent plans. Also joining us in studio, Michael Manchek with the Economic Vitality Corporation to talk about how a regional airport plays into the local economy. And welcome both of you, of course.
Thank you, Randy.
Thank you.
Kevin, what services can people expect at the airport in the years to come that aren't there now?
Well, thanks for the recap on the locations and destinations. We really, really, really look forward to having a third carrier at this airport.
Right now it's United and American.
It's United and the New American. We have seen, you know, brands come and go in the industry. Our U.S. Air service was formerly America West. And through all the merger and consolidation efforts, the brands continue to change. The U.S. Air Service becomes American now, and the rebranding is complete at our facility. So a third airline, I think, is something that we have been working on for several years and continue to do so. But it's not the airport's decision. You know, with deregulation in 1978, the federal government basically took their hands off the wheel for who gets what in the airline industry in terms of service. And communities look to build relationships with the carriers as well as their local community stakeholders to foster that service and create the relationship and then the understanding of what the business opportunity is in a community for an airline. So it's a much different dynamic than I think a lot of the public thinks that. You know, we're San Luis Obispo. Why don't we have a flight to Barcelona? And perhaps there's a few people a day that go there, but it really comes down to some different dynamics that are much more business-like than they are regulated.
And are you able to determine the number of people passing through your airport that fly for business or for pleasure?
Yeah, we do that through some surveying that we do in terminal annually. We have a unique situation here that we're what's considered a non-seasonal market. So we're not Aspen or, you know, Fort Myers, Florida, or someplace that has a big winter or summer push. So our traffic is fairly stable year-round, and it's a fairly healthy mix, anywhere from 50-50 to 60-40 of business and leisure throughout the year. So it's a stable and you know, almost somewhat predictable mix of customers that puts us in good favor when we're talking about potential air service.
And that would be attractive to a third carrier. And with that third carrier, it would be like a non-legacy airline, right? Like a Frontier or something like
well,
that?
Well, you know, we've talked with several, although there's fewer to talk to today than there was, you know, 5 and 7 and 10 years ago. There's essentially four carriers in the United States now that control 85% of the seats.
Wow.
So you've got Delta, American, United, and Southwest in that mix that are controlling a vast majority of the service that's out there today. Airlines like Virgin America, Alaska, JetBlue, you know, they're recognizable brands, but they're a very small percentage of the seats flying in the United States, respectively.
How about Surf Air? Did Surf Air ever consider San Luis Obispo as a destination? That's a really small carrier where you buy, what, like an annual pass?
Yeah, it's the, the Netflix of airlines.
Right.
You pay a monthly fee and you get access to the network. Interesting, really interesting business concept. There's a lot of eyes on that in the industry right now. Flying a small aircraft, Pilatus PC-12, more of a business aircraft than what you'd think of an airline using. But a very different business model, and certainly looking at a segment of travelers that is a small segment of travelers, people that fly frequently, to typically the same places. So yes, we've had meetings with Surf Air. We are interested in what they may want to do on the Central Coast. Their expansion plans for the next 6 months are in larger metro areas where, you know, the market base is much larger. But I can foresee a time in the future when we would likely be on their network.
So, and Mike, I will get to you in just a moment, but I want to get an idea in my head of what this new terminal would look like. Anyone who has been through the San Luis Obispo terminal knows the restaurant is outside of where you wait for the plane, and it is really a one-room schoolhouse kind of situation.
It
won't be like that in the future.
No, and you know, a very brief history of our terminal is a good portion of that building back in the day was the Ag Commissioner's office.
If you can imagine. Really?
Yeah. In fact, we still use the barn, the dirt floor barn, the vintage facility behind it for our operations and maintenance facility. And so the interesting history of the current building. It's been remodeled and expanded several times. It's served the community for, you know, gosh, over 40 years. It's been a great facility, but it's 12,500 square feet, and it's much too close to the runway and taxiways to continue growing the airport. And by growth, you know, think about that in terms of the size of aircraft that we're seeing there today. This facility was built around a 25 to 30 seat airplane, and the smallest we have today is a 50 seater, and 70 and 90 seaters are what we're seeing in our fleet mix as well.
And
so
pretty much all of the Central Coast airports are getting rid of prop service.
Yeah, the
right?
turboprops are in our region have been retired, and that there is no replacement aircraft in the pipeline for either a 30 seat turboprop type aircraft or even a 50 seat regional jet. We're looking at a very real and foreseeable future where, you know, the small regional jet will be a 90-seat aircraft, and that's almost twice the size of our smallest aircraft today. So the new facility is really going to enable us to handle the larger passenger volumes in terms of the cluster volume. If you think about it, you know, when you're moving people through the building in that size group, it puts much different demands on the facility than if you have groups of 30 coming through.
Will it have more of a feel of like a Santa Maria or Santa Barbara airport when you walk through those terminals?
It will be a feel all its own.
Right, of course. As San Luis Obispo can only do, right?
We're very excited about it. It's going to have some great views. The terminal, as you come into the lobby space and the security area, some very high window walls that are going to look back toward the mountains and toward the Seven Sisters area, so it sits on a bit of a rise on the airport. So the view out the front door will be notable. And then when you get into the passenger lounge area, some of the views out the south side of the building will be quite nice as well. So lots of daylighting, a much more open feel. There's actually going to be an outdoor area behind security, which very few airports have. Palm Springs is probably the most notable in California. A courtyard type space that you can go into, and actually once you're clear of security, you can be outside, which we think is fabulous.
Will that allow people to smoke, or there'll be no smoking in that area on premises at all? You mentioned security. That's one of the big reasons for having the terminal upgrade.
You know, the two primary reasons are safety, because of the current proximity of the building and the aircraft when they're parked to the runway taxiway environment, and capacity because of the numbers that we're pushing through there. Security is always an element. You know, our building was conceived before TSA was even an idea, and the requirements continue to expand and change, and they always seem to take up more floor space, more wall space, more office space for equipment and people and procedures that are used in the passenger screening process. And our building is very stressed by that right now. In fact, a project we did last year to put in some baggage screening equipment actually took up counter space that an airline would otherwise be using. So we're having to make some compromises today that are not sustainable for the future in our current facility.
Right now, as I understand it, Santa Barbara is the only airport that allows you to be a pre-registered secure flyer. I forget what the name of the program is.
The pre-check program.
Pre-check program, right? Yeah. Under the new terminal, is that a program you'd like to have brought in?
Of course, yeah. There's certainly some metrics that TSA looks at to see if you have a traveler volume that makes that program viable. But one of the other nice aspects of the new building is we'll have two security check lanes, passenger screening lanes. And while they will likely not be in concurrent use frequently, it gives us redundant equipment. You know, one of the challenges we have today is a single lane security checkpoint. If anyone's ever been through there and had one of those machines break, everything turns into hand screening. And that is a very, very slow process, which the airlines don't like, the customer doesn't like, the TSA doesn't like. So we don't have enough space to put in redundant equipment today. So in the new facility, we look forward to having that, the capacity to do that. And, you know, it's things like that that you know, people may not see or even understand or ever think about, but it's things that we think about every day.
All right, Mike Manchek with the
I've
EBC.
Enjoyed this.
It's a good conversation. How big of a role does a regional airport, a functional regional airport, play in the local economy?
Well, so the EBC, as a regional economic development organization, has had the pleasure of working with the team at the airport. Kevin has been fantastic to work with. We are really a supportive role to the airport, the reason being that it involves issues that the airline cares about, which is the business traveler. So we tend to have access to the business community, and we help bring them to the table and drive that conversation so that it helps the community overall. The airlines suggest that the business traveler represents the majority of their revenue and profit. Business travelers generally pay more, and they travel with less notice, and therefore that increases the volume of their dollars. Saying that, it is one of our board members who's been active with us on supporting the airport, which we've been doing since 2008 when we lost half of our service at the airport. And we think we've played an important role in helping the airport in coordinating and collaborating with them. But one of our board members, Mike Cannon, suggests that, you know, the airport is if the community or economy was a human body, the airport is one vital organ, the community can't be as vital without a vital airport. Whether or not you're a business traveler or you're just a retiree or a student or just a leisure traveler, it is not a good thing that people are having to drive far, far away to use other airports in other counties as opposed to using our airport. So we tend to think that it is a use it or lose it sort of a proposition. It's an incredibly vital airport that we have, and we're blessed to have that, and it is performing far better than many airports. That said, we still need to use it if we expect to have it here. And that's one of the missions that the EBC has in supporting the airport, is to drive the awareness of the airport and the importance that it has in the economy, which, by the way, is when many years ago it was done, an economic impact study showed that it was a nearly $200 million a year impact on the local economy. I would suggest that
200 million.
Yeah, 176 to be exact. But I think that is woefully low, because you wouldn't have a lot of big companies here that provide an amazing number of jobs and a big presence without the airport. So it doesn't include that. And if it did, the number would be far, far larger.
I would think most of the business that takes place among companies here that happens outside of the Central Coast would happen either in the Bay Area or in LA, which are a reasonable drive. But you're saying that the companies here do rely on being able to fly to other places throughout the country.
Absolutely. So we have an unusual circumstance in our county's economy that many of the thriving and big businesses here, not all, but many, have customers that are outside of the community. And therefore, that's why it's all the more important that they have access to a thriving airport that allows their customers to come here and them to go to the customers. And without that, you're really constraining businesses. You're constraining them in cost and time. And so that's why it's so important. The airport is truly one of the EBC's highest priorities, and it will remain such. But this means the community has to be informed and rally around it and support it and use it. In often cases, I'm hearing that flights out of this airport are really not more expensive than other airports. But I would just urge people to really shop and look at the fares coming out of here.
I just had that situation not that long ago when I flew back to Madison, Wisconsin, and it was a far more valuable for me to fly out of San Luis Obispo. That's not always the case, but it, yeah. but if you do it, if you search, you can find it. Mike, you not that long ago, if I remember correctly, went to Salt Lake City to rally for flights to get a nonstop to Denver. Is that right? Or to Seattle? Didn't you go somewhere to help push for additional nonstops?
Mike and I have participated in meetings, airline meetings together. And you know, one of our approaches in as I was discussing earlier about building this relationship with the airlines is about bringing various stakeholders, whether it's from the tourism or the business community or a prominent local business, to the table and help tell the story about your community. I mean, we put a lot of data in front of the airlines that they see from cities all over the country. But what really starts to bring that off the page is when you bring people to the table who can, hey, that chart or that graph you're looking at, here's what that really means, and here's what we do, or here's why that's important to us. It starts to bring life to all of that. And that is so important when you're trying to remain memorable to an airline that's meeting with cities all over the country mm-hmm. who are all competing for the same thing. It's important for people to understand that our neighboring airports of Monterey and Santa Maria and Santa Barbara, while they're neighboring and there is a I would call it a very modest competitive aspect to that, because believe it or not, our bigger competitors are San Francisco and LA. Yeah. It's not Monterey and Santa Barbara. That group of airports, we're competing for attention and resources from the airlines as much as a city in Iowa or Maine or Florida is to obtain additional service or new service. So it's a very, very large network that we're maintaining a place in and trying to grow within.
That's fascinating to me that the competition is LA and San Francisco, and it makes sense. How much say does the local airport have in the final ticket price?
None. We don't set the prices. And again, you go back to 1978, and there was a deregulation legislation passed that took the government control of many, many aspects of airline network planning and marketing and several aspects of how the business is run out of the hands of the government. There's plenty of aspects that remain firmly in control by the government, but in terms of a lot of the business model and strategy, that was handed over to the airlines. And so as a local community, we don't set the price. We don't get to dictate that to the carrier. And I hear from people, you know, that's more expensive. Well, to Mike's point and in your experience, compare it, because there are plenty of examples of when we're competitive to even less expensive than taking the drive. I would also encourage people to really consider, you know, when you're traveling, you're purchasing the commodity of time. You know, why not just drive to Salt Lake City or drive on your trip to Gallup, New Mexico? I mean, that's probably going to be cheaper than driving. But when you choose to fly, you're making a conscious choice that getting there quicker is more valuable. And at times it seems interesting to me that people will choose to drive the 4+ hours to the hub and deal with the parking and the congestion and all of that challenge to then jump on an airplane for 2 or 3 hours. So what is your time worth at the end of the day? And that, you know, that's a different equation for everyone depending on what the purpose of their trip is and what their budget is. But air travel is the commodity of time, and that has to be weighed into the equation.
Kevin, how, with the increase in jet service and the expansion of the terminal, how will that play into local air quality and noise factors and those sort of things, especially given the recent passage of the Luce? Does that play into the equation, if at all?
So, you know, the jet aircraft are different in terms of their flight profile, how quickly they climb, their forward speeds, the type of engine, therefore the sounds that it makes. From the standpoint of regulated airport noise, the jet aircraft don't affect the noise contour of the airport to any measurable degree that suddenly changes the noise profile of the airport.
Because the prop planes are anything but quiet.
They're not exactly quiet, and there's more of them per day. They're moving slower, both horizontally and vertically, so the duration of that noise event was longer. So the jets are different. Simplest way to explain it. As far as land use planning around the airport goes and the situation with the Luce and some of the work with the ALUC and the city.
And Luce, I just quickly want to bring people up to speed, is the land use circulation element that was passed by the city council in somewhat controversial setting.
Sure. So the short answer to that is that the forecast changes in the airport or the – years ago, and a lot of the work that was done, the planning level work under the airport master plan and some of the subsequent documents that have informed the Luce and other documents, a lot of what we're seeing today is a manifestation of what was on paper years ago. So we're not living a much different future than we imagined, perhaps other than maybe the years that it's occurring in, and the Great Recession changed that, certainly. But, jets are different and in terms of the flight characteristics, and we're going to continue to see technology make those aircraft quieter and cleaner. And the next generation of aircraft that we're going to be seeing here probably at this airport in the next, 4 to 6 years are going to be quieter, cleaner than what we have today. Those are regulated standards on an international level. So there's a bright future there.
Is passenger volume at the San Luis Airport a good thermometer on the economy? Could you tell during the recession there was a big pullback, and what are you seeing now?
Well, yes, but to Mike's point that we lost a significant amount of seats and flights. Mm-hmm. Our passenger volume is an indicator of also what the airline's health is or what their tolerance for risk is in smaller markets, which is an indicator of the greater economy regionally and nationally. So, yes, we're a reflection of that, perhaps a few layers removed. But, unlike perhaps a larger hub airport where you would see enplanement levels and therefore the load on any particular flight decline, we consistently fill our flights at the 80 to almost 90% capacity level on any given flight, which is, in many cases oversold for an airline. And whether we're operating with fewer flights than we have today or what we have today, we consistently fill those flights at the same level. And of course, with the transition to the regional jets, we have fewer daily flights than we had in the past. We had 14 a year ago, and 14 flights a day a year ago. Today we have 10, albeit on larger airplanes. So we have more seats in the market here today than we did a year ago. And a typical notion of air service is how many flights per day to where. But what people fail to think about in that sometimes is how big is that airplane going wherever it's going. And the trend in the industry is bigger planes, fewer times per day. It's a more efficient use of the pilot resources and the slots at the major airports.
That's the big argument between Chicago O'Hare and Atlanta at Hartsfield, right, when they claim they're the busiest airport. It's based on number of passengers versus number of planes, I think.
Right. Flights versus seats kind of calculations, yeah.
Mike, are there any companies that are considering the Central Coast as their hub or at least a branch of their company, and the expansion of the airport plays a role in whether they would make this their home?
Well, so we have companies here in the region on the Central Coast that have an international presence, and we're also, I think, the community is blessed to have companies that are they're household recognizable names, and so that has the benefit of causing people to realize that there is a vibrant business community here. So it kind of puts us on the map, if you will. There's companies like, for instance, Amazon that we've all read about here, whose headquarters is in Seattle. Certainly that's a good thing, I think, in that it will help maybe to drive some conversations towards getting some service there and other places. But in the years since 2008, we've been with the airport team to a lot of cities around the country to talk to the airlines. I can't emphasize enough Kevin's point how competitive this is. I mean, there are lines of communities outside the door of the airline to say, please bring a service. And the business proposition or business plan has to be developed by the airport to say, look, here's why it's going to work in our community. What I find really interesting in talking with Kevin is even during the best of our economy in the last few years right, post-recession, that even then airports around the West have either reduced service or closed in some cases. That's rather alarming, which emphasizes the point again that if you don't use it, you might lose it. And when the EBC many years ago helped the airport with a survey of traveling passengers, there was some of the statistics showed that in the surveys that over half of our air traveling passengers in our county don't use our airport. That's something that we need to really work on and change. And I think I'm not sure how that's changed Kevin, with the data you see, but you know, that's not something that is preferable.
Yeah.
Where people get into their car and they drive far, far away. We've all done that. We will all continue to do that in some cases, but it's certainly not my choice and the choice of most people to go through the hassle of having to drive far away to fly.
Yeah, the industry term for that is leakage, and we're at an interesting point right now where our leakage is at a point where people choosing to fly from this airport are going to have trouble finding a seat. Mm-hmm. Because what we have is being filled to a level that there's just not much more capacity to accept that. So, you know, you have leakage by choice and then leakage by circumstance. And I don't know what that breakdown is. That's something that you can't pull out of the data. But that there are people who would choose to fly from this airport that can't get a seat here either. So it's a complex situation.
For sure.
But we're conscious of that. And that's something that when we talk to the airlines about, you know, we're very clear about that the market here by many measures is larger than what's being served with available seats today.
Kevin, I know we just had the groundbreaking back on October 10th. What is the predicted date that I would walk into the new terminal and it would be used, you know, it will be used by the public?
We'll say late spring to early summer of 2017.
That's not too far off.
It's really going to depend on how good our El Nino is this winter.
Right.
So if we can stay on schedule here in the first phases of the project. But yeah, it's about an 18 to 20 month build, and we're optimistic that we'll be able to maintain the timeline. And of course, the migration of our current business into that building will have a kind of a hard stop and then a next day of operation in that new facility. So the current building remains occupied and operational throughout construction. And fortunately, the construction is far enough away that the traveler traveling in the next year and a half or so will not be impacted by the construction.
Well, I love the update. Thank you so much for being here. Kevin Buhman, he's the general manager at the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport. And also Mike Manchek with the Economic Vitality Corporation, talking about the expansion of the airport here in the coming years and really how local regional airports affect the economy here on the Central Coast. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you, Randall.
Thanks for having us.
And this is Issues and Ideas here on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Randall White.